I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Now for 2020, the Friday Special series is running every week, and each week I'll have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification, effects, pedals, accessories. We'll have brands, producers, musicians, etc. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by my co-host, Matthew Knight.
Hello there.
And Matt Gleason from Monty's Guitars. Hello, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
Ah, not at all. Now, I spoke briefly before we went on air about the fact that this is going to be incredibly tricky because I have two Matts here. So, I might possibly refer to you as Monty throughout.
Do it. It's fine. Most people do, in all fairness.
Wonderful. I'm going to do that in that case. but yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Obviously, Monty's Guitars are a brand that Guitar Nerds have been aware about, you know, for a long time. And you know, you yourself have a massive kind of history as a luthier. You've got like 20 years of experience in the brand, and you know, Monty's Guitars as a London sort of luthery repair everything else. Shop are incredibly well established, so yeah, that's a brief overview for the listener if you've not heard of Monty's Guitars before. But I guess the thing that you're almost becoming most known for are your pickups.
Yeah it's Monty started a long time ago. There was me and another guy, a guy called Leon Furbrush, who is now heads up Grizzly Guitars, we started Monty's as just a guitar repairs thing. It was literally Monty's Guitar Repairs because it sounded better than, you know, going down to like 145 Guitar Repairs. but it's also, you know, Monty had been a nickname of mine when I was younger. I was a big Monty Python fan. Also, he had a cat called Monty at the time. I mean, it was just loads of things. So,
is the Monty Python thing actually a reference? That's incredible. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. I mean, the dead parrot sketch all the way. we did that. We were both living in Ealing at the time, and then Leon moved to East London, I moved to West London, so we split London like the Russians and Americans did with Berlin and
set some territories.
I stayed in the West and he went East, and so it all started like that. And we, you know, just doing repairs as and when. I mean, in all fairness, when I started this whole thing, I really landed on my feet. I started my apprenticeship with a shop in Kew called Chandler Guitars, which at the time was hands down, apart from Bill Puplet, was hands down the best place in the whole of the UK to get your stuff done.
Yes, absolutely an incredibly renowned store, and some wonderful names to have behind you as the sort of mentors who have brought you to this point as well.
It's absolutely crazy. I mean, from off the bat, we, you know, the first customer's guitar I was allowed to work on was Dave Gilmour's, which was just like mental. But they didn't tell me until after I'd done it. So I wasn't allowed to touch a customer's guitar and for 6 months. And then, you know, after that, then, you know, it sort of went on. And this baby Taylor was put on my bench and...
It was a baby Taylor.
Yeah.
It was this really distinctive black Strat that was like sort of...
I'll get onto that later. But this baby Taylor, right, was put on my bench. It had a warped neck and it was being left... All I was told was it'd been left in this guy's summer house and it was just like his, like, tinkering guitar. And can I swear on this thing?
Yeah,
okay,
that's fine.
It was fucked. So I sorted it all out. I reshot the neck. I sorted it, and etc. And then 2 days later, because this guy called Phil Taylor.
Yeah, who's, Phil Taylor's his tech.
Yeah. So he came, picked it up, went away, and 2 days later we got this phone call, and then Charlie Chandler came to me and went, "Well, Dave likes the guitar." And I literally just didn't say anything. I ran outside and phoned my dad. I was just like, "You never guess." And it was one of those things. But I mean, not only did they have the best repair guys there, West London was where all of those guys, all of the old rockers lived.
I might be wrong here, but didn't you have one of the first Plek machines? Didn't you have?
Oh yeah. That was my first. That was my first job. That's why I got hired. I was the Plek operator. So, the Plek machine is it's a good thing, man. It's really good, but it's like I see it as a tool that if you need it, you use it. But it doesn't set guitars up perfectly. It can. The one thing it can do that nobody can do is that if a guitar neck under tension twists differently than it is without tension, so if the grain's funny or something like that, then a Plek machine will hands down get you out of trouble. But otherwise, personally, when you set a guitar up just using the Plek machine, it feels a little plinky, if that makes any sense.
Is refreshing. This is good, because the Plek machine really was the sort of new kid on the block. But it seemed to be something that was being adopted as far as I'm concerned, and of course it's no secret where my allegiances lie with sort of types of guitars, but it seemed to be the sort of thing that was being adopted only by very, very modern brands as kind of the as like, this is the thing, it's you know, it's Plek setup, but you know, of
the buzzword
course,
almost.
Yeah, it's a buzzword, and for me, I was like, well, there's never really been a problem with any of the, you know, Fenders or Gibsons or Gretsches or, you know, things like that aren't Plek set up. So I've always met the sort of Plek idea with a little bit of skepticism. So that's refreshing to hear.
Yeah, but I think the thing is, especially the way the world's gone, is that middle run guitar shop where it was. Small enough not to be a box shifter, but big enough to have a decent repair shop, that's gone. And so having, if as a guitar brand, having the Plek machine sort all your guitars out before they go out into a crate and then off is a good thing. Because, I mean, a lot of my work when I started was sourcing out all the setups that came, you know, all the guitars that came in, you know, it was, they were so badly set up. And also, because guitar brands don't dry their woods out properly, so then give your guitar 6 months and then it's completely different to what it was when you bought it and you need to sort it all out. And the Plek kind of takes care of that. So I can see it, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd have one in my own shop. They're really expensive. I'd prefer to use, to fret dress, I use a Spirit Level, which I could get for like £2 from Homebase. I mean, it's seriously like, you don't need to spend 60 grand or whatever it is. But
wow, is that how much they are? Wow.
I from memory, I honestly, I don't know what they are now, but from memory, it was a lot of money.
I'm pretty sure it's one of the only ones in the country. I'm sure I remember it being advertised. It's like, this is the only place you could have. One of like two places you could have.
Yeah, there was like, Chandler's had one and Joe Glacier over in Nashville had one. I mean, it was one of those kind of things. It was, I mean, he is like the tech, you know, to send stuff to. So yeah, it was a big thing. It was a really big thing. But, at that time, everything was like forced through it, and I don't think it's necessarily the right thing. It's just, you know, it was a new tool. Everyone wanted to use it, but you know, that's one of the things that Chandler's had, I guess.
Yeah, sure. And so from there, you then went on to start Monty's, and mm-hmm. and the thing about Monty's guitars is it's kind of a bit of everything, because you're offering, you know, which we'll go on to talk about in more detail, but you're offering everything from courses to pickups to Monty casters to pedals. Like there's kind of a, it's become very much a sort of a jack of all trades in that sense. But, you know, also with an incredibly impressive, list of customers, you know, we've spoken about Dave Gilmour, but of course he's by no means, you know, your only sort of celebrity customer, I guess.
No, I mean, I've been really, it's luck really. I mean, I think guitar repairers and techs and in all fairness, it's like tone, you find something that you like, somebody that you trust, and then it's like a hairdresser. Once you find somebody that's good, you just don't go anywhere else. Yeah. You know? So it's that kind of thing. And I've just been really fortunate to be in the right place at the right time, and work my ass off, you know. But we've got done stuff. Like, it was really my most rock and roll moment ever was when it was Sunday. It was a Sunday evening. I was watching some crime drama with my wife, and I get this text message, and it says, "Hi, this is Ed from Radiohead, and I've heard about your pickups and this thing." And I shit you not, I thought, right, because I've been speaking to a guy called Steve Crow. Do you guys know him? I mean, if you don't know him, you should know him. He is like literally tone legend. But we've been talking about. Because he does Ed's amps, and I've been talking to him like literally the day before about Ed O'Brien, and I thought it was just him fucking with me, but it wasn't at all. It was actually Ed O'Brien, and he was just like, "Yeah, I'm recording this new album. I want this new this sound, and I really want to set your paths and all this kind of thing." I was just like, fuck yeah. It's like, what do you say to that? I mean, it's like, that's the kind of thing when I was like 16, like lying in my dorm room listening to OK Computer repeat, you know. That was like absolute, you know, mind blowing. I mean, I've been lucky. I've met a lot of really nice, really cool guys, you know. But the first year I was in Chandler's, I remember it came up to Christmas, and we had Chris Rea came in, and I mean that's like my all time favorite Christmas song, man. This is so cool. And my job was to clean his guitar leads. He was going off on a little like Christmas tour, and I had to clean all the gaffer tape off his guitar leads. But he was there sat there talking football at me, and I'm not a football fan. I'll put that out there, and so I was just like, "Yeah, kick the ball, win the goal." it's been really, really cool. Met a lot of nice people.
It's been a lot of growth though, because obviously I first came to know about you. To be honest, I was trying to think about this before I came on, because I bought a set of the PAF pickups, I don't think I spoke to you at all at that point. I just bought mm-hmm. them off the website. And then I remember we were talking about them. We were talking about them on the podcast, and I think we saw you at the Birmingham Guitar Show.
Yeah.
A couple of months afterwards. But at that point, I think you might have just popped up on a random like search or something about PAF pickups. But that was pretty much the only thing you were doing. I think you'd only just started doing pickups and you were like, well, this is the cloak, because you'd worked on some 59s, I think, at Chandler's, or, you know, over the time that you've done it. And if you're like, this is
That's one of the wonderful things about Monty's guitars is because you've come into contact with so many incredible vintage guitars, is that a lot of the Monty's pickups, which are, you know, obviously what you're becoming very renowned for, are based on pickups that you've had the opportunity to try and, you know, in your own words, be inspired by.
The one thing with all these, the whole vintage thing is kind of it's a strange thing, but well, back in the day, they weren't thinking about making them the best sounding. Every single guitar, the best sounding guitar, they were just churning them out, you know.
Yeah.
And do you know what? In fact, it all started when back at Chandler's when I saw Charlie put together a 62 Strat out of bits that he had sort of found and bought from various places, and he was putting different pickups in and trying them out, and like one, they were all 62 Strat pickups. You know, which you'd think they'd all sound pretty much the same. You know, they'd sound, one would sound amazing, one would sound great, one would sound absolute toilet. And then, you know, it would just yo-yo around. And it was just like, well, what, but why is it like this? I mean, but, you know, at Fender, there was a load of people just winding, having a chat, like over their desks to each other. So it could have been like, oh, Dora, can you get me a cup of tea? And it's, well, a cup of coffee, I guess it would be. But, you know, so they're not accurate. Nothing's accurate. And like when you go to the PAF thing, the machine that wound them, part of the mechanics that counted the windings, that was made out of cardboard. So that kept failing. So it was made out of, it was, they used time to wind them. So, I mean, you've got the first thing where, so okay, if someone gets a little bit distracted, you know, might overwind it a little bit, or they're using all the soldering irons at the same time, so there's power, so, you know, the power's different, so things are completely different, then there's no consistency. And it was basically because I was in that fortunate position of seeing a load of really cool old stuff, I basically started making notes of all the ones that I really liked, and really delving into them, and there was a thread, there was a common thread through all of them, you know, and and that's it, and that's in all of my pickups, humbuckers, strats, everything, it's all about this kind of clarity that comes through, which is, it's, I mean, as you guys know, I mean, it's like stage volumes are coming down, everything's, you know, you can't just turn yourself up to be heard, you need to be sat in the mix really nicely, and that's what we're after, that's what I'm after.
It's certainly a weird time, isn't it? I do think it's a transient time to be making anything, because the hunt is still, as you say, the hunt is for that 60s sound, really.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, whether it's Fender or Gibson, we're looking for that late 50s, early 60s sound, things that are very familiar to us, those early records. But we want to apply those to modern day, in which, you know, we're getting to a point where if you're playing a really pro gig, then, you know, you've got to think maybe a 15 watt amp might actually be pushing it by today's standards. You know?
Yeah.
Because we're moving towards silent stages, and it is moving the bar. And now that we're wanting to run, you know, if you want those tones, we're wanting to run those guitars into digital, you know, digital things like the Helix, the Kemper, the GT1000, stuff like that. It's such a change that it's so difficult. It's almost you're going to have to do something very, very specific in order to get the right tones from those vintage sounding pickups and guitars in order to apply them to, because we're not applying them to the same setting. We're now applying them to such a different environment.
Yeah. But I think it's all, again, I mean, the thing is, when you're dealing with like a Kemper or any of that, all in-ear monitoring and everything, you can just hear yourself so much better. So you become you become more picky about your tone, you know, and what you need to hear and all of that stuff. And it's always the only thing I've ever heard from anybody is just, I need more clarity. That's all I need.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like, I need to hear myself more. I need to hear this. I need to hear this. I need it. So that's what we strive for. I mean, that's what, you know, when I was doing the whole covers band thing, we went in, we had silent stage in there monitoring and everything. And it was just everything. I used to basically, I'd test ride all of the pickups when I was playing. So it was just like, what could I hear myself through? And we had like, you know, it was guitar, bass, keys, track, electronic drums, all that kind of stuff. And if you can still be heard through all those frequencies, then you're onto a winner, you know. And that's that, you know, I think.
So I guess, you know, with that, you know, with all that being vintage pickups, obviously we should probably talk about, I'm guessing probably one of your most popular pickups has been the Danish Pete DP51 yeah. Teleset, which bizarrely enough is based on, well, it's based on his purple telly, but I found a picture of that telly the other day being played in GAC, the same serial number, which we really? Obviously sold, I'm guessing new at some point, and it came in to say, because I think one of my colleagues sold it when I was working at GAC, and then I helped sell it to Pete when I started working at Anderton's. But I was scrolling through loads of old phone photos and I was like, Pete, I think this is your guitar from like, and like dated from like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So bizarre how it ended up in the same set of hands twice without me knowing it. And then to Pete. But the funny thing was that guitar was actually sold to someone else at Anderton's, and then the guy returned it like a week later and just like wasn't getting on with it.
Yeah.
And then Pete was like, oh, it's the best guitar I've ever played. So I guess, I mean, how did you kind of end up speaking to him, and how did the idea come about that you wanted to do it?
Well, Pete and I have a similar sense of humour, I think, and we just got kind of chatting over social randomly. But, I mean, it all came about really when he came in to speak, because my workshop's right next to Audio Kitchen, that do like amps and like the Big Trees pedal and all that kind of stuff. And he came in there and we kind of just got chatting. And then he had the telly in, and I just was like, well, do you fancy doing something? It was literally one of those kind of conversations. And we took the purple telly apart, and he said that it was the pickups were meant to be a twisted telly in the neck and a no caster in the bridge, and they're not at all. I mean, it feels like that it was one of those guitars that was kind of put together for a show, and it was just like shit on the bench and that they had, and they just chucked it out, and it just was random magic. But because I mean, the bridge pickup from a pickup builder's point of view is built like crap. it's all wonky. It's the coils all loose. I mean, everything's all weird. It's definitely not a no caster pickup. It's got a different stagger. It's got loads of different things. And the twisted telly neck, it is, I mean, it's underwound for a twisted telly, and it's a little bit taller. I mean, there's loads of little bits that are different in that. So it's not what it says in the tin. I really think, because there's a rumour that those purple tellies were built for like Frankfurt Music Messe or something. And there was four of them, or three, four of them. And I really think it was literally, they just grabbed what was around. So I looked at those, and then we kind of, you know, just reverse engineered them, which, and then Pete came in, tried the first set of prototypes, and was like blown away. And now the prototypes are what he has in the telly now.
Right, wow.
So he doesn't have the original pickups in that. The bridge pickup, he actually wanted a little bit hotter. So it is a little bit hotter. And so that's that. But it's been really crazy. I mean, when they released that, I don't know what people, you know, think we sell. We don't sell huge amounts. And then they're like, Anderson's released that video, And in 24 hours, we sold 130 sets of those things. And I mean, that's like a year's worth before then. And it was mind blowing, a huge learning curve. And all the team were like, it was beautiful because everybody pulled together and everybody came, we all came through. Yeah, we fucked up and there was some that went out that didn't work and blah, 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 blah. But all, we fixed it all. And, yeah, it was crazy going from, because that was literally 18 months from going from a one man band to I had 10 people on staff building all of these things.
Wow, that's incredible.
It was crazy. Yeah, really, really crazy time. But, you know, it kind of needed to happen.
I did kind of want to ask whilst we were sort of on the thread of, I guess, guitars and stuff. What you specifically use, Monty?
Me?
What you would consider your standard? What's your standard guitar and your standard pickup configuration as a bar to sort of put everything else up against?
I'm a Tele guy through and through, which is like, it's why the Paps that spoke to me were the ones that sounded like big single coils. You know, it was all that.
Really, that's interesting.
Yeah. But you know, if you look at it. The path was that was produced to rival Fender and become a noiseless single coil. That's what it was. But anyway, my favorite guitar, like on paper, like the vintage aficionados would shoot me, but it's a Pine Telecaster, but it's covered with a thick layer of glitter and then, and then some poly. It's all Goto hardware and stuff. It's the first guitar that I put together for myself that I haven't changed. Apart from it's been refretted by a guy, I think, you know Tim Hughes, don't you, Matt?
Yes, yes.
So this is when I was teaching him how to refret, and he fucked up. So he rolled the edges of the fingerboard too much, so it like reduced the playing area, and you know it was all crazy.
This guitar's on your website, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a picture of this guitar. You've got a name for this guitar.
Sparkles.
Sparkles. That's it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. She's a beauty. But So Tim did that, but then he fixed it by. He sanded the board down, got it lower, which is now it's actually the sort of, to be a complete geek, it's the fingerboard is the correct vintage thickness for like a 62.
Good. Yeah, exactly. That's what I want. I don't care about playability. What I want is
vintage accuracy.
Correct. Yeah, that is me to a T. I do not care about playability. It has to be vintage accurate.
Exactly.
And I won't accept anything else.
Yeah. So we got that all fixed but now, I mean, the neck before was good, but it's like now it's amazing. It's the first guitar I've not changed anything bar that minor fuck up.
Did you finish it yourself as well?
No. There's a guy who used to work for All Parts UK called George, who I stole and now works for me. And he sorted it out. And it's All Parts US have made the body. They got sent it to the guy who does all the G&L stuff.
Oh, and, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and then it got sent over to me. The neck was another All Parts neck, but they get made over in Japan. But I think it's a Tokai factory or something. And we reshaped that anyway. But it's fantastic. Really, really good.
Talking of guitars, obviously, everyone can go on to montysguitars.com to see that. I kind of want to know about the Frankenstrat, because there's basically a picture and then you don't really say what it is, but I'm counting... What's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 switches, and then a volume two tones? Are they
so
just
for
on
the,
there?
For
that...
the listener, for the listener, these switches in this Monty's Caster sort of Frankenstrat, as it were. These are rotary controls that are all as close to each other as you can get, and they are all absolutely next to each other on the base of the guitar, on the on the rear belt of the guitar.
So that was made. That was made for a guy called Sam Grant, and he was in a band. Oh, I can't remember the name of the band, but he's just like the loveliest guy. And I made it initially when like this. Oh man, when was it? It was like 2005, so pretty early on. And I built myself a Telecaster with a fuzz probe in it, which is one of the things that's in that.
Yes, and that's, I like this story already.
And he saw that and was just like, well, could we take it further? And so he wanted a fuzz probe. It had a ghost system in it, so the acoustic saddles, a sustainer, but also he wanted a regular pickup in the neck as well.
There's four pickups there. Is there?
Yeah.
Or is it three?
Yeah.
So is he planning on playing this guitar anywhere else other than the moon? Or
No. He was in a really, really cool... the name escapes me. He was in a really cool band in the noughties. But then he now does like most of us do. He's like covers bands and does all that kind of stuff. And he still uses it. It's the most stable guitar he's got. And
that's amazing.
Which is crazy because there's fuck all wood in it. he came to me with this thing, which is like, I want all of this in it. And I was just like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And it was literally that. I had no idea what I was doing. I kind of plumbed it in. The whole guitar, it's like, you know when you're building a pedal board and you're sort of channeling it, every component through? That's what it is in that guitar. I mean, it's like spaghetti junction inside.
Wow.
But it's amazing. The sounds that he can get out of it are crazy. And also, when I finished that guitar, his name escapes me now, but the guitarist from The Verve, what's his name? Oh, Jesus.
I can't
remember.
Anyone
got Google?
Hold on, I'm Googling.
Go Google. But
Nick McCabe.
That's the one. So I was just about to give the black Strat to Sam, and Nick McCabe's tech was in Chandler's, and he tried it out, and he was just like, Nick would love this. And then I got, literally, like 5 days later, I was just like, you've got to make another one. And I made one for him. And I had to drop it off at the Roundhouse in Camden. Which was amazing. And I got to see the show. That was the first ever kind of show I got to see because I had done something. Do you know what I mean? And it was it was crazy. But yeah, that was really, really cool.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love all that stuff. I mean, it's just like, how far can you push yourself until you fuck up? And that's that's kind of life, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you do offer a building service on your website, basically, don't you? You can pretty much
Yeah.
I mean, Monty casters. You can exactly. have anything built. You guys will build any bolt on, right?
Yeah. I mean, in all fairness, I don't really consider myself a luthier. I'm more of a. I see myself and my skill set. I'm a guitar sort of tailor, as it were.
And you do also offer a maintenance course, in fact.
Yeah, we do. I mean, but the maintenance course initially it was just like you started off as like, you know, how to set your guitar up and stuff. But there's so many people were coming to us and wanted to know different things, all of which are really, you know, really simple, easy to put through. So we got to the point where it was literally you can kind of customize your day. So we'd have three guys in, one doing a setup, one doing wiring, one building, I don't know, a nut or, you know, all that kind of thing. And it's all really doable, all really cool. And it's just a nice atmosphere. It's really fun to do. I love doing it and seeing these guys go away with like something that they've accomplished is really cool.
Yes, that is it's a wonderful thing, a wonderful thing to offer, because I think a lot of courses that you can get at the moment, certainly in the UK, tend to be all encompassing luthery courses. So it's wonderful that you're almost you're giving away the trade secrets right there.
Do you know what I did? There aren't any secrets really. I mean, it's all. Yeah, everyone can do all this stuff. It's not rocket science.
No, of course. And, it's a weird thing, though, isn't it? Because it is something that seems to be, you either know it or you don't. Like, as someone who owns a little vintage guitar shop, I can't count the amount of times where people message me and they're like, "Does this guitar have any fret buzz?" And it's, you know, those are those sort of questions where it's like, oh, you don't understand how a guitar works. Like, you know, how you can alter a guitar, how any guitar could have fret buzz. And it's just there. I think there are a lot of people out there with zero knowledge of that side of things, which is absolutely fair. I mean, I would suggest that I probably have 2%, maybe 5%, you know, of knowledge of stuff. Just about enough knowledge to make something not unplayable in order to sell it. That's kind of what I have. But the fact that you offer a service to educate people in that sense is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it goes back to the fact that there's no trade secrets. I think everybody should be able to, if they want to give something a go, just try it out. I mean, as long as you're careful, you're not going to break anything. And if you do break anything, you come to me. but in all seriousness, I think there's so many people that guard everything. And really, why? I mean, there's a lot of people that want to tinker at their weekend, you know. And, you know, maybe they can't afford to come to somebody to get their guitar set up, or maybe I just want to fucking learn, you know. It's one of those things, and it's I think you shouldn't guard all your secrets. I mean, it's pointless. It also, from a brand's point of view, it builds trust, and the fact that you're willing to say how it is, you know, and put it on the
absolutely.
Line.
Absolutely,
that's an important thing.
I mean, so I guess this kind of leads on to, you talked a bit about obviously how you got your job. I mean, there's kind of two questions here. It's like, one, why did you decide to do what you do? And, you know, decide, when did you decide that was going to be your career? But also, what advice would you give to someone who, where's the best place to start with this sort of thing? Like, because, you know, I remember the first time, you know, working in stores is the first time you discover Stu Mac, and then you get the catalogue and you're like, oh my God, I need like a diamond edge.
Wage is gone.
I need a diamond edge file saw and all this sort of crazy stuff. And then you're
I have one of those.
Oh, you poor boy.
And then, I've never used it.
And then exactly.
And then people like me go, wow, yeah, Amazon. And then you're just like, what's the cheapest file I can buy? It's like,
do you know what? I mean, I think with all of this stuff, I mean, if you want to start, you just start. I'm a big fan of just like, you fuck up, you learn. It just rinse and repeat, and then you get there, and eventually you will get there. And that's it. Pure and simple. I was really, really, really lucky to learn from who I learned from. If you can get in with somebody like that, then grab it and run with it. And you know, that's it. But you know, if you want to do anything in anything, you've just got to go. You've just got to start. That's it. There's nothing else. That is it. You know, I think.
Just dive into it.
You will always make mistakes, and that's normal.
I guess with anything, and the great thing about guitars is you can probably never break a guitar beyond the point of repair. In some sense, I mean, I'm sure you could smash it completely.
I mean, Matt, you've clearly never dropped an SG.
Yeah. Although saying that, I mean, I've had guitars with neck breaks that have all broken.
Oh, that's nothing.
Like. But even if you snap a truss rod, you'll be able to pry the fingerboard off and replace it and all that sort of. So
yeah.
You know, there's kind of. I mean, definitely don't. You know, get your parents like vintage guitar they've had for 50 years and go, I'm just going to adjust the truss rod. And then it's like, oh, it's really tight. I just need to like keep going. And then snaps. And you're like, oh,
wait. I also think a big thing is to know when to stop and ask for help.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. I mean, you know, and it's sort of realizing where your weaknesses are and searching it. I mean, this day and age, you've got access to so much information. And also, you've got access to people. I mean, I answer all my own Instagram stuff. So people ask me questions all the time. So it's really easy. If you want to try something out and if you want to get somewhere, just do it. Most people are nice, despite what the news will tell you. Nice. and it's that's the thing. It's just get up, do it. If you want to do it, and just try it up and message someone. If they give you an answer, then that's great. If they don't, then that's fine, and just carry on.
Absolutely. I actually messaged you about a problem I was having.
You ignored my response.
I'm so, so sorry.
Really?
I figured it out in the meantime, and I do apologize. Basically, I messaged everyone I knew who knew anything about guitars at that point in time. It turned out that the guitar I was looking at, the person I'd bought it from had rewired it and had rewired the pickup ground and the other thing the wrong way round. So I was I don't understand why this is doing what it's doing, because it was a Squire Vista. Do you remember the Squire Vista series? They were fantastic Chinese made Squires. And they did a little Music Master bass, which I purchased for next to nothing in bad condition. I was fixing up. But this single coil bass had been fitted with a pair of 500k volume and tone pot, which meant that it was doing far too much anyway. And then they'd got the ground and live the wrong way round. So I couldn't work out why. But the problem was the circuit looked fine. So me as a layman, as someone who's not very good at that sort of thing, I was looking at this circuit being like, well, this does look okay. Like, this does look like how I think it should look. Like, this with the wire passing from the pickup to the volume to the tone to the output jack and the other one going to the earth. Like, I was like, I don't understand. This looks fine, but it's making a horrible sound and it sounds terrible. I understand that the 500Ks are wrong, but that shouldn't be a reason that it sounds like this. And so it took me ages to sort of realize, and then finally I sort of was like, hold on, the black and white wires are the other way round. That's the only problem here. but honestly, it took me a day and me messaging pretty much everyone I knew who had anything to do with guitars before I eventually came to that conclusion. But I've gone off on a tangent here. But I guess that's good, exactly man. that situation is exactly the service that you offer to eliminate the issues of.
We mean it's lots of, we just see that kind of stuff all the time, so it's
the worst condition guitar you've ever seen or worked on, should I say? What's been the hardest project?
Okay, so there's three things that come to mind. There's the first one, which was the most rock and roll one, where Elvis Costello's warehouse, where all his gear was stored, got flooded, and we had to sort it all out. So that was pretty mind-boggling. We had to dry it out for like 6 months, all this stuff up for 6 months, and then go on from there. But the good thing the most amazing thing that came out of that was it possibly one of the craziest guitars I've ever played was this. I think it was a 175, or it was like a Gibson hollow body archtop thing.
Oh, tell me more.
And it had a single P90 in the neck. And he had painted it like a mushy pea green on the front, and like some other gas, like kind of grassy green on the sides. But anyway. But it sounded amazing. It sounded absolutely out of this world, and it was like crazy old. And but that's what our 54 P90 is actually based on.
Really? Incredible! Yeah, on an Elvis Costello pickup.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely again, amazing.
Again, but it goes back to the fact that I'm just being really fucking lucky, you know.
Yeah. So you really have.
Yeah, I know. And I'm absolutely, really, really humble. There was another time where there was this guy who, I won't say his name, but he brought me his guitar. He had been very naughty, and his wife had caught him doing something naughty. And he brought this 335, which was like a 60s 335 with See You Next Tuesday carved into the back of it. Which I had to then like sort out. So we did that. That's another one. Which was very, very funny. Oh God, what was the other one? Okay, so it's a friend of mine, a guy called Zane. He's been my like longest lifelong customer. Even when I moved out of London, he would still come drive to see me up in Peterborough, and then all that kind of stuff. But this the crazy thing about this guy, like he played right-handed. Something happened to his little finger on his right hand, his left hand, so he couldn't fret things properly. So he's relearned left-handed. And
I hate him already.
I know. but he's a super nice guy, can play it and all that kind of crap. So he's playing, he had a Firebird, a Gibson Firebird custom shop thing. He's playing it in his flat. His sister and his niece were over. His niece was at the top of his stairs, and she was about to fall over. And so Zane shouted and ran to save his niece. And at the same time, his sister opened a door, which then smashed the guitar. So Zane then fell over, guitar smashed. He fell over on the stairs, completely disintegrated this thing, but saved his niece. Most important thing.
That is the most important thing.
Yeah, exactly. But we rebuilt the Firebird. So that was... Wow. Yeah, literally, the neck was complete. Well, he came to me with a headstock, a body, and that was it. So that was pretty cool.
That's incredible. What a wonderful thing to do. In fact, it's my main reason for being such a Gibson fan is that I think they That they just have to survive so much more than anything else. Well, anything that's a set neck. Just is under so much more pressure to actually survive. So if it has survived this long, then it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. One of my favourite people that I've ever met was a guy called Alan Rogan, who was Pete Townsend's tech since day dot. Sadly, he died last year, but he he told me that Gibson dropped off a load of SGs for Pete and like before a tour, like pre-production stuff. And this is when they went to that short joint in the neck and Pete like wobbles the neck around loads. picked it up, played a couple of chords, neck off. Next one. Played a couple of chords, neck off.
It was the worst guitar. That is the worst guitar in all of history to give to that man.
I know. It was, it was
fine for plenty of other people.
But not him. No.
Not him.
Don't do it. Yeah.
No.
Very, very funny.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, the flip side of that, what is, because you sort of alluded to it earlier. What are some of the best guitars that you've had the pleasure of playing?
It's just luck. But I played the Gilmore Blackie. I played the same one,
really?
the 0001.
Oh, the red one.
No, it's a gold one.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah, and bursts and lots of, 54 Strats, broadcasters. But all of them can fuck off, because the best one I've ever played was owned by a guy called Terry Britton, who wrote What's Love Got to Do With It and Just Good Friends and Devil Woman, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
1969... Telecaster that had been resprayed in what's it called, like Pelham Blue, but
wow,
the neck on it was just to die for. It's just like you could play anything on it and it would just be amazing.
Well, you heard it here first, listener. The greatest guitar of all time from a man who's played most of the best guitars.
But do you know
what? 1969 Telecaster.
But do you know what, that period in like Fender's history is a magical period that people just completely just throw away, because there's this, they like, from the pickup point of view, they went from potting in wax to potting in lacquer purely because it was cheaper. But what you get with that is you get this like really hard outer core on the pickup, which protects all the harmonics and all that kind of stuff. But the inner coil is like completely free, so you get all these extra like 3D kind of things going on, and it's
really
yeah, and it's crazy. I mean,
always been a sucker for those things. Like if you say wax potted, I'm there. Like that's it.
I mean, wax potted is, it does great things, and people like talk a load of stuff about it, and it's, but in reality, it's the actual, it's how it affects the coil. So what you want, ideally, is you want the outside of the coil to be nice and tight and the inside to be a little bit like Hail Mary. So it's because that way you've got all of this bloom and all of these extra stuff going on, but it's kept under control. Which is why you'll see people saying that they like partially pot, or they, other things like that. You know, that's what they're doing.
Sure,
it's a way of keeping all the extra goodness into the in the tone. That's it.
Yeah, wonderful. One thing we haven't actually covered yet is the fact that you recently branched off into pedals as well. Monty's guitars pedals. I want to talk about the Moore.
That it's a boost, and that it all came about because I was using multiple boosts on my board.
So it's a JFET boost, which kind of fits right into what me and Matt love, which is what we call on the Guitar Nerds podcast, make gooderers.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. Right. I mean, a JFET works like a valve, so even like the more any JFET circuit put at Unity is going to make you sound better. I think, unless you really fuck it up. But
no, I'm there. I agree.
it came about because I was using multiple boosts at different points on my board. And I was just like, I can't be asked to have all these different pedals. This is like no word of a lie what happened in my head when I came up with the idea. I'd spoken to Steve Crow of Audio Kitchen about it, and was just like, can we design this? And he was just like, yeah. So I had this idea for a single boost thing. And then I got out of my car one morning when I went to work, and my dog, who's sadly no longer with us, Pippin, took a shit outside my car. I was thinking, oh, she's doing a poo. Maybe I could do two boosts, one pedal. I shit you not, that's what went through my head. And then I walked, obviously as a good responsible dog owner, I cleared it up and I walked upstairs and I spoke to Steve. It's like, can we put two boosts in a pedal? But
you handed it to him and
said, here you go, here's your little doggy parcel. Is this a possibility? Could we have like basically two separate boosts, so you can have one at the front of your drive chain, one at the back, so you can not only slam the front of your pedals and to make them basically one pedal do two things, and then at the other side you can just make it louder. And just
so throwing up and shitting at the same time, but you're going to do this in a pedal that is essentially two boosts with an effects loop.
Exactly. So that's
genius.
Yeah. I made the crazy decision about sort of 2 years ago to run with any crazy idea I have, and that was one of them. So, we've gone with that. Everyone who's tried it has been really, they've really liked it. We haven't really pushed it, but it's one of those things that once we get it.
It is the only pedal that Monty's guitars do, essentially, isn't it?
At the minute, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting. I'm excited to see what happens next.
There's lots of stuff. There are lots of stuff in the pipeline. We're just, trying to sort out all our, all the boring back end stuff that you guys must know.
I don't know what I'd like to see next. I'd be excited to see, from a company like you, I'd be excited to see a Maestro style fuzz. I'd be excited to see your take on that. That would be interesting. Yeah,
we've obviously both got a passion for pink, so
absolutely. I was going to say, more than anything, the fact that you've just put and it's got bright pink on it was just
exactly
total win.
Have you seen our new packaging?
No.
If you've looked at our Instagram recently, we've got new, my wife ordered some samples, so she thought, of some tissue paper, which turned out to be like sort of 20 kilos worth of tissue paper. This is like 11 years ago when we first started. And we finally got through the last bit on Thursday this week. Like, seriously, so we ordered a load more, but now we've got shocking pink, we've got like this crazy turquoise that we use all the time, and loads of other stuff. So yeah,
I have to order something pink wrap.
Yeah, definitely, man.
I do actually want to talk about the aesthetic a little bit, because that's kind of one of the things that's very, very unique about Monty's guitars, is the fact that you've very much gone for this ladies and gentlemen's brand. That is a really deliberate thing about Monty's, and you really represent that. Obviously, I've only seen you at UK shows. I don't know if you've ever done any US shows.
No, we haven't yet. For
listeners around the world, obviously, everyone UK based, if you've seen a Monty's booth at a guitar show, it's very much like walking into an apothecary sort of thing. And that is the gist of it. And I love that there is so much aesthetic involved in your brand. I actually think this is a very important thing. This is a conversation that me and Matt have had with loads of people on this, on the Friday specials. But like the aesthetic of a brand is a really important thing. And I love that you've gone for this, almost this gentleman's barber's kind of feel. Yeah. That seems to be the basis behind that. So, I appreciate this is off topic, but I'd love you to talk about your decision behind that and why you've gone for such a unique branding idea.
Well, do you know what? It's like twofold, really. Like the first thing is that I want anybody that has trusted me with their cash and like given me, bought something from me to have the best experience they can and have every step of the journey as well as I can make it to be as special as possible. So hence the packaging that takes us, like literally we have a whole day dedicated to packaging. And it's ridiculous, but everybody that I want everybody that gets something from us to have a nice experience. I mean, how nice is it to receive a nice handwritten letter these days? I mean, literally that simple. It's nice, and if we can do that, then as a thank you, then fair dinkum.
Yeah, but you sold something to Vince, I work with, and
he posted some pictures from Boss. Good old Vince from Boss.
He posted some pictures of all the packaging and was like, I was like, oh, you didn't tell me you were buying some pickups. You're like, no, I just bought like some wax.
We should actually talk about this because Monty's guitars. You do your own wax, your own guitar wax, which is quite unique.
Yeah, well, it's just like, again, all this stuff comes from the workshop. So this is, I started using, again, this goes back to our mutual friend Tim Hughes, who, when he came to work for me, he was using this finishing wax, but it was he would clean a fingerboard down with lighter fluid, which is kind of normal, and then he would oil it with lemon oil, and then he would put finishing wax on the top. But the problem with finishing wax, like traditional stuff, is it stinks to fuck. It's like it's got loads of terps in and all that kind of horrible stuff.
I mean, I love huffing that stuff, but it's not good for
boys. Yeah, I mean, it's good for like Friday after school, but it's it's not good for anything else. So we like. He kind of went away on tour, and then I was dicking about with some stuff and came up with a recipe, and that's it. We get like the wax is all London beeswax, so it's made from beehives within the M25, basically. Like
that's wonderful, amazing.
Which is really cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah, basically there's a few like oils we use and then scents and stuff and that's it. I brew it all. I mean, actually, since lockdown, my wife and my beautiful kids make it all. So they do it. They make it. We've got
that's
this like
amazing.
Cauldron thing.
That is
it's proper
is
hand.
Amazing,
it's proper family thing. Monty. You know, it's really 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 cool.
That's wonderful. What an incredibly cool thing to get to have to your family name. I really think that's the best thing
I've heard.
But that's so cool.
Yeah, but also going back to the whole, the whole ethos of the business and stuff, and just I've suffered a lot with like mental health problems and all that kind of stuff during my life. So everything that Monty's is, if you come in to it, it's designed to be a safe space, so you don't, if you want to geek out, you can geek out. If you want to, whatever it is, in which then reflects in the, in the packaging, it's like a thank you. It's all about that connection with people. All of it is. And because I think if someone's, trusted me with their tone, I want to give it all back, trust you with everything. So
absolutely. And you, and you actually, as a brand, have been very supportive of mental health charities as well. In the bust as well, which I think is a hugely important thing. Very important to us at Guitar Nerds. And you know, it's wonderful that that, you know, that that you do as much as you do. I think it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, no, thanks, man. It's I mean, it's a really big thing, especially amongst blokes. Which, I mean, let's face it, most of the you know, the guitar-y people are, not all, obviously, but it's just,
no,
it's
and, just... and to be honest, and an important thing to mention, an awkward thing to mention, as it always is, because the guitar community is so skewed in favor of men, and something that we as guitar nerds strive to to mend, and obviously the community suffers from hugely, is that it is so, it's so skewered in the direction of men. And of course, yes, absolutely. And you know, whilst Guitar Nerds is never want to get serious, I think it's a very important thing that male mental health is addressed and dealt with, and it's fantastic that your company deals with it in the way that you do. And and of course you know, Guitar Nerds echoes that. You know, we obviously want to you know, at once you know, be as much of a broad church as possible, and you know, yes, yeah, help any, you know, help the entire concept of male mental health as well.
Yeah.
There you go. Guitar Nerds getting serious there. For...
Yeah. Well, we need to say a cock joke or something now, right?
Yeah, exactly. <I'll>, so, yeah. yes, absolutely, everyone. Right, hold on. I'll just... let me describe my penis for a minute, and then
that's beautiful, God, that's man. That's, yeah, that's yeah, perfectly done. You've absolutely gone through.
That is it. Yeah, that is. In fact, that is about all we have time for on this week's episode of the Friday Special. So Matt, Monty, it's been wonderful to have you on. Thank you so much for coming.
That's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to have you on the podcast. You can of course catch more Guitar Nerds over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, or you can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds. And we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. How about that? You can also check out Monty's Guitars, if you didn't already know, at montysguitars.com. So do that as well.
And buy some awesome t-shirts.
Buy some awesome t-shirts.
I absolutely love your, I've got to say before we go, I absolutely love the Marty Made Me Do It t-shirt.
Yeah, that's but man, that's my life. That film inspired everything. I had to make that. I had to do that.
Yeah, it's incredible. No, I can't see any... anything to do with Monty's or your brand on it, but it's just an amazing t-shirt.
No, you don't need it. It's just like that's it. It's a statement.
Absolutely wonderful. Fantastic. Well, we'll catch you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
See you later.
Laters.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.